I'm Laura. I'm Matt Carlson's grad student here at UAA, and I'm studying pollination networks and what happens to those networks in the presence of invasive white sweet clover, which is the little plant right there. It's Melilotus albus. So to start, all of our stuff was done Fairbanks and north on the Dalton Highway. So it's all in the boreal forest, which this is actually setting up one of our sites. And you can see the boreal forest looks all like around Fairbanks. There's like spruce and mixed deciduous, which is how most people think, oh, boreal forest, lots of trees. But when you look a little closer at the plants, there's all these other flowers too, along with some other ones. This is just a few. And one of the things that these flowers all have in common, and is really common in this part of the state and in general, is that they're all considered generalist plants, which means they're super dependent on a wide variety of pollinators, versus a specialist, which you think of like a fig, needs a specific fig wasp to come in and pollinate it. Where these guys here, they're like, I'm a flower, come visit me, pick up my pollen. And so the plants and the insects really cannot live without each other. And so you can't, the point of this project is basically to study them together as one grouping. And the way we do that is the network studies. So this is a really simple plant pollinator network diagram. This is actually one of my super simple sites that works really well for describing. So the insects are across the top. And for this project, we ended up grouping them into, they're sort of functional groups, sort of morphological groups, sort of, they're in a grouping that we could do by site when we did some in-person observations. So you could say, aha, that's a butterfly or a moth, in case we couldn't catch them. And in some of our sites, we actually couldn't. And then also, they're sort of functional for the plants. For instance, surfeit flies are a really common group of plant visiting flies. And the plants are across the bottom. This one is Melilotus albus, which is the sweet clover, and the Camarian angustifolium, which is fireweed. And so what the lines between represent are visits to those plants. So two things visited the Melilotus, one surfeit fly visit and one Lepidoptera visit, and then one other fly, which I'll explain the groupings better later, visited that fireweed. So when you get these pretty pictures, now you're like, well, what do I do with that? So you can do a bunch of calculations. And the few I'm going to talk about are down the right side. The connectance, the links per species, the cluster coefficient, and the nestedness are the ones that I'm focused on for these particular networks. The connectance is basically just a measure of how many links actually happened. It's not weighted at all by amount of visits per thing. It's just yes or no. Links per species, actually none of these are the weighted ones, these are all unweighted. Links per species is across that entire network also, it's how many connections are there, average, per species. The cluster coefficient is basically like the average of the connectants across each of those links, through the each of those nodes, if it could have, so the Melilotus could potentially link to three, there's only two. The Camarian could link to three, there's only one. And so the average of that ratio across. And the nestedness is a measure of basically how chaotic your network is. If your network is perfectly nested, and this is done in nestedness temperature, so it's 0 to 100. If you're perfectly nested, it's 0. If it's absolute chaos, it's 100. Absolute chaos would be where everything visits everything, it's totally random. All insects go to all plants, wherever, there's just lines everywhere. Perfectly nested is a generalist plant has a very specific pollinator, and a generalist pollinator goes to one specific plant. So to look at it like this, it kind of ends up like a curve of lines almost when you look at it. This is too small to actually demonstrate nestedness. But. So the big overall question I'm trying to figure out is, how does this plant pollinator network change in boreal Alaska when Melilotus albus invades? And this is along the Dalton Highway. This is actually one of our sites on the edge. And so the road's on the right. That's white sweet clover on the middle. And then our site would be on the left side. And our site is actually kind of off the picture to the front of it. I'm standing kind of at the edge of it. And so you can see that it takes up that entire embankment and just kind of overwhelms the edge of the road there. And to look at that more specifically, I'm looking at the network changes. So in, like, what does the picture look like of those networks? And then also studying the changes in those network parameters. And the other thing I was looking at is, what are the visitation rates to native plants by pollinators? Does this change when the melilotus comes in? Is the melilotus attracting pollinators, or is it sucking all of the pollinators away from those plants? So when I started this, here's what I thought would happen, is that the plant pollinator networks are going to be less connected. This is the native section. So when I did this, it's take out the melilotus, and what's left is the native plants. So they're going to be less connected, so they'll have fewer links joined to those nodes, lower nestedness, and fewer connections per node. And I also think that the visitation rates are going to decrease, because I think pollinators are going to be so attracted to this white sweet clover, because it's huge, and it's showy, and it smells good, and it's got a ton of nectar, and it's rewarding. And I think that they're all going to go there, and the pollinators are going to kind of forget about the native plants. And there's one lone little fireweed in the middle of a bunch of sweet clover there. So, did I miss one? I missed one. Okay, so I'll just talk about it. I deleted the slide accidentally, I'm sorry. there's two ways we're gonna talk about this, is unmanipulated sites and manipulated sites. So one of the things we did, we went up to the Dalton Highway, we found these site pairs where there's approximately 300 meters apart, there's on the same side of the road with similar habitat, this site has an invasion and this site does not. And so we did pollinator studies at the invaded site and we did pollinator studies at the non-invaded site, and we compared them. The other thing we did is in Fairbanks, well, around Fairbanks, we did it at Bonanza Creek and Caribou Poker Creeks, we set up a melilotus addition and control sites. So we actually outplanted some melilotus and made sure we pulled it back out before it dropped all of its seeds all over the research area, and saw what happened to those networks when we just, like, boom, brand new melilotus population here. So these are the Dalton Highway sites. These are unmanipulated. We did them in pairs. So the goal was that hopefully we wouldn't get big groupings of melilotus versus non-melilotus sites, and that hopefully being in pairs that they would be the same as possible. So the habitat is similar, the weather that day would be similar, so hopefully the pollinator populations and the plant populations started out as similar as possible when we started the study. So here's how they were laid out. So there's the road, that is the Dalton Highway. And then we set up these grids. There's 10 meters by 10 meters, so it's kind of like there's two plots, a roadside and a non-roadside. And then we stuck some video cameras out to watch our insects and see what they did. So we actually had four cameras, and we did it twice at each site. So there's eight videos total per site. 30 minutes per video, although we recorded a little longer, and then I took 5 to 35 to hopefully, because when you're walking around and setting up the camera, you really disturb stuff. So hopefully that, we were hoping that that would get the human disturbance out of it. So here's a video of a ledum. This is kind of representative of what they look like when they come in. Here comes a pollinator, lands, checks it out, drinks some nectar, flies away. So that happens in a couple of videos after you watch them for like hours. So this is one of our unmanipulated sites. This is basically what they look like. I'm standing on the edge of the road to take this picture. You can see it's usually fairly brushy and more open, and then towards the back where the trees start, it's pretty normal that there's more trees in the second non-roadside plot than the front roadside plot. And actually, not surprisingly, there's more insects in that warmer, drier, non-treed front a lot of the time. And you can kind of see there's some little bog stars or something in the front here. So at these unmanipulated sites, from watching the videos, this is what it shows up. This is the sites without sweet clover. So you can see the groupings across the top. So we've got syrphid flies, other bees, other flies, moths and butterflies, wasps, which is from the video, it's just like a, that looks like a wasp. So it's mostly vespids, beetles, and then bumblebees. And then the plants across the bottom, Melilotus is showing that line there that says there's nothing because there is no sweet clover at these sites. And then fireweed is Camarion angustifolium, Achillea is yarrow, Parnassia is bogstar, Cornus is Canadian bunchweed, and then Potentilla fruticosa, which I don't even know if it has a copy.
Potentilla.
Yeah, it's just Potentillas. And so that's what it looks like, and you can see there's the connectance, the links per species, the cluster coefficient, the nestedness. So they don't really mean anything just standing out there by themselves, but there they are. Basically what it says is about half the links are connected. And it's pretty, and it's actually fairly nested because it's on the low end instead of on the high end towards 100. And so this is with the Melilotus in it. And you can see that a lot of stuff visits the Melilotus, which actually I found surprising. And actually in this one, there's no bumblebees, which is also surprising. So when I started this project, one of the things I expected is that bumblebees are supposed to love it. And it turns out everything visits. And I should clarify, we are counting visitors as pollinators, so that we didn't do like pollen collections off the insects to confirm. So side by side, there they are. So you can see that one of the really interesting things that happens here is the visitor ratio kind of shifts around a little in the pictures. So if you look at the yarrow, the Achillea on the left is without Melilotus, and on the right it's a lot smaller, which represents there were a lot fewer visitors, where the fireweed actually expanded the Melilotus present. So whether this is due to some weird Melilotus effect or some weird habitat effect that we don't know, or I don't know, but it's pretty cool. And it actually happens in the Fairbanks ones also a little bit. So here, under the right side, the connectance on the bottom is a little better comparison, I think, because that's when you take the Melilotus out. So without sweet clover, the connectance actually decreased overall to those native plants. Links per species decreased, cluster coefficient decreased, and nestedness decreased a little bit, but just a little bit. So the visitation rates, there's a few more visitors where there's Melilotus, but not really. I mean, it's pretty much the same. The P on this is like 0.5 or something, ridiculously. Like not, it's the same. But one of the things that's interesting about this, so I actually removed one outlier from this. The absent had one video that I took out because it was a yarrow plant of one video that had 12 visitors per flower hour. And everything else is actually pretty close to less than one. And so it was really hard to compare, and there's only 20 sites total, so it really was skewing everything. So I'm gonna have to figure out how to deal with that for real. For this is a much more representative look at it without that 12 per flower hour. It was just a really good flower, obviously. So because it's kind of hard to see, you're like, what the heck is going on with all that stuff? One of the things we did is we tried to do a variable importance plot to pull out, like, is the Melilotus actually affecting this? It looks good, but is that what's going on? So we measured a bunch of stuff while we were at those sites other than just Melilotus and plopped them all into the variable importance plot to see what's happening. So these are ranked on the left are all the variables, and on the right are actually what they are. On the left are all the variables that we measured and put in. And you can see that Melilotus, this is actually the size of the Melilotus patch, is way at the bottom, which is at the bottom of the importance of visitation. This is importance at predicting the visitation. So pea flower is the most important, roadside is the least important. Pea flower is actually the number of flowers in a plot around that K camera where the camera was looking. So it's like a floral density around where the camera was looking. An F flower is actually the number of flowers that you can see in the camera. So in a lot of cases, it's basically the size of the inflorescence of the flower. In some cases, you can see there's a couple other ones in the background too. But mostly that's the focal inflorescence. And those are the most important for predicting whether or not something will be visited, according to this. Which, I'm studying Melilotus invasion, so that's like, oh, well, what is going on with the Melilotus? This is the Melilotus II. So this is the flower plots. This is just showing as the flowers increase, you can see it's like from, it just ramps right up, and then it kind of, this is showing how much importance it actually has in that variable. So at zero, there's zero, and then if there's any flowers at all, it shoots way up, and as you get a ridiculous amount of flowers, it kind of tapers off. Those are probably, actually Melilotus in there, would be my guess, because it's 2,500. And this one is the Melilotus. So we're trying to figure out, well, is Melilotus actually important? So if you look at it, this is the size of the Melilotus patch in square meters that we measured on the side of the road. And it actually, when we measured it, we actually maxed it out at 90. It was like, that's the huge invasion is 90 square meters, because we just didn't measure the entire road. So you can see that it does this weird, like, ramps up. It's getting more and more important, and then as it really gets a bigger patch, it drops back down. And so those first couple of little patches in there actually seem to have more importance than the big patches, which seems counterintuitive. But the 20 square meter patch is actually kind of small. I mean, if you think about it, invading an entire roadside, that's just a little, like a clump of plants. So now that we did that, one of the other things we did that I'm not really talking about is we actually did some collections while we were there. We did in-person observations also. So we stood around at a 2-meter by 2-meter plot, and we watched for things to land, and we tried to collect them. And so I just kind of quick threw in mostly the families that we saw at each of the types of the sites. And it's kind of interesting that there's a lot more variety of families we collected at those sweet clover sites than at the non-sweet clover sites. And there's actually, I think within those families, and I'd have to actually, it's been an embarrassingly long time since I thought about this data set. But I think there's actually more variety with, where there's both, there's actually more variety within the families also. And more quantity, I think, too. I feel like this is actually less of a, as you get finer grain, I feel like it's less of a, it's less indicative of what's actually happening, because we had a hard time catching certain insects on certain plants. So building the network at like a collected level, very specific, is actually doesn't show as many connections as the overall like broad-based brush that we just did. So the thing we did with Fairbanks at Bonanza Creek and Poker Flats, and we put Melilotus in. So this is one of those sites there. We had 8 of those, 4 control and 4 additions. And we put a bunch of sweet clover in the center. And this is how they were laid out. So in the center, there's either a control or the Melilotus. And we had these orbits going out. And so they had focal plots all around. And then for the cameras, we randomly chose those making sure we had at least one at each orbit distance out from the center. We randomly chose for our 8 videos and did the same 30 minutes to per site sort of measurement. And here we are. This is setting up one of the sites. So you can see there's the outplanting in the center, and then the focal plots go out in rings from that. And so there's the zoom in of the outplanting, and that's our temperature reader in the center. And this is the site without any Melilotus planted. You can see it's still got the stake with the temperature reader, and then you can see the circle of flags for the orbits of plots. So what's going on here? This is without any outplants. And you can see there is 3 pollinators across all of the videos. And the connectance is low. Everything is low. No big surprise there. And this is when the Melilotus gets added in. We didn't do videos of the Melilotus here, so I don't actually have that for visitors, which is unfortunate. But we were studying the native plants, not the Mellow Lotus, but at this section. So I don't know what visitors go to Mellow Lotus here. But you can see that there's more connecting and more visitors and more types of insects, same as there was at the Deltons and the collections. And so if you look at all this, the connectance goes up, the links per species goes up, the cluster coefficient goes up, and the nestedness is significantly up. So it's way more chaotic, which is what I expected. The Dalton videos, the non-manipulated, when they're exactly opposite, although these are more. So and here's their visitation rates. And so when the Mellow Lotus comes in, brand new Mellow Lotus, and there's a bunch of visitors at those sites. So the same sort of thing. And if you look, this time, Mellow Lotus, yes or no, is only not a density here, and it's at the bottom. The flowers are still at the top. How many flowers are right around that plant that I'm looking at is really what is predictive of some plant getting visited. And here's the same plot, and you can see it actually is a slightly different pattern, but similar. It ramps up fast, there's lots of flowers, and then it gets less important as you get more and more and more and more and more flowers. Oh, I did miss that one slide. So, in conclusion, I guess I was surprised because the manipulation and the non-manipulation are not actually in the same direction. And when we look more closely at that, what's happening, the Mellow Lotus influence is actually way more at the bottom than I would have expected for a Mellow Lotus project. We're looking at the pollinators. The plots show that the insects just are looking for, at least in the plants that we were looking at on those days that we were there looking, the insects were looking at how many flowers are nearby, and that's what they were visiting. So it's kind of an interesting thought. So what does this tell us about if Mellow Lotus is coming in? What's it going to do to those pollinators? Well, it's hard to say, I guess, partly. But also, when they come in, they're a huge bunch of plants all in one place. So maybe they are more likely to establish themselves where there's already good native plants because they have pollinators to support them and they can help support the pollinators. Or maybe they'll help draw in some pollinators because suddenly there's a bunch of flowers where there weren't before. They may actually, one of the theories that started out at the end, which maybe this is kind of the flower amount being important is sort of leading towards, is one of the things we talked about is that because sweet clover actually blooms way late in the season, especially like up on the Dalton Highway, most of the stuff is fruiting. Most of the native plants are fruiting by then. So one of the theories is that, especially with the insects, because they go so quickly, a lot of them, but like the bumblebees, it may help extend their season, helping bolster their populations because there's more flowers later in the season. By the time the sweet clover is really going, most of the plants that are up in the Dalton stretch where I was, there's a lot of fireweed. It is pretty much what the most common plant, and the arrow on the shoulder also. And so maybe it'll actually help if it actually can help extend that season. It may do good things for pollinator populations. However, it also may shift the population because it may help different groups of insects differently than are there now. I've had a ton of help. Couldn't possibly have done this by myself, obviously. So I've had a lot of research support from a lot of different places. This is primarily a USDA project. And then I've had other funding from ACAN-HP and EBSCOR and LGL and UAA. And LGL actually sent me up to Derek's lab. No, EBSCOR sent me up to Derek's lab, which was great. So I learned how to identify a bunch of insects. Couldn't have done that without his help. And my committee, Matt's my main advisor, and Krista Mulder and Doug Kazi. So.
Got a minute or so for questions. Surfeit are probably a common, very common pollinator, but surfeit, the larva of the surfeit is a carnivore, eats aphids. So you might have an impact there. Also,
there might be. And there's surfeits actually, when we were out there, the surfeits, there's a lot of surfeits on the sweet clover,
right.
Actually.
And they go with the habitat, too.
Mm-hmm.
Moist moss and stuff. And another thing also is that Dean's invasion along the highway is right along the highway. You really have, if you were to make a transect across the highway from one side to the other, you would have native plants, then you'd have sand or gravel, then you'd have the sweet clover or the epilobium.
Mm-hmm. The fireweeds, yeah. And the yarrows are up there too. Mm-hmm.
And but it's really you see relatively little invasion in natural habitat.
Along that particular habitat, yes. However, it does really invade a little bit into burns, I read, but it really on the rivers. Those gravel bars just
and it's
really happening.
Yeah, and
it's really
happening. Yeah. Where clover invades, that means moving north.
Yep. It really does. It along, especially like the Dalton Highway, it really stays on that.
Right. It's really, really localized.
But yeah, I mean, it's pretty impressive actually.
And I wonder, you know, what effect that is on the movement of sand by the wind. The less.
Maybe there's less dust.
Vegetation, you just got the dirt in.
Mm, yeah, it does.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's stabilizing.
Actually, there's one spot where. I forget which year it was, but we went out, there's one lone plant just starting to colonize. And so you can see they're biennial, these plants.
Yeah.
And so they shoot up the first year. Sometimes they'll flower a little bit if it's a good year,
uh-huh.
But most of the time, the second year, they get the big bushes that you see. And then they drop all their seeds, and then they're just like the stalk standing up there. And they're also nitrogen fixing. And so there was actually, along the roadside, there was the one plant, and it was... I think it was a stalk, and there was just grass,
right.
Like in a ring
around it.
Growing.
Right. Right. They look like they've two cycles within the same season. Like as you go north, you will find toward the end of the season, you will find the clover season. You have the clover and then the second growth starting the fall.
Yep.
And then it's time to mature. But there's two layers. You see one layer of sweet clover.
Like where they've dropped the seeds, you mean?
Right?
Yep.
A new growth, and then you have another growth that just spread the seeds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of the 2 year cycle.
Yeah.
And you can go. I don't know, as you go along the road, you can kind of see which ones are the first years and which ones are the second years, and they kind of cycle, like as a population almost, they cycle also, I think.
It's very complex.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that, nestedness, that last variable.
Yeah, how chaotic it is.
Yeah, the chaos. I was wondering, I was just imagining if your like observational period was extended, maximally. I mean, I would think there would be a relationship between chaos and duration of observation.
There is actually, that's actually kind of a problem with this in general, is it's really sensitive to sampling intensity.
Yeah.
Really,
you,
really sensitive.
But you were strict with keeping that constant.
That's actually why at Fairbanks there's only 8 sites that are, because we had 4 control sites and, I don't remember, 12, 15 of the non-control, but there's no way to do a network comparison if you have 15 of one and 4 of the other, because you really skew all that. So what it is, so the way we did those Fairbanks sites, actually we did the Dalton ones the same way, is we did the first half of the site, we did our observations, we moved, we did the first half at the other site, then we moved back and did the second half, and then did the second half. So hopefully the weather was, so we, instead of doing like all of this like 8 o'clock in the morning when
right.
It's 50 degrees and dewy, and then all of this in the afternoon, So those Fairbanks ones are only those pairs that
gotcha.
We did, and the Daltons were set up as those pairs. So hopefully that took care of that. But yeah, it's super sensitive to that, which is what strangely enough, that's what happened with those Dalton videos, is because that's why they're all 30 minutes. The first time I started playing with this data and running it, I just took the videos and I took the visits out of them and I plopped them up. And apparently there's a lot more time on the Melilotus sites than the non-Melilotus sites, just for who knows, just the cameras were just running and we were doing other stuff and counting flowers. And when I chopped them back to the 30 minutes, it actually changed what the results looked like, which I found fascinating. I was like, whoa, good thing I did that.
Okay, now I have to keep moving along.
Yep.